Welcome, passengers, to episode 308. This is Artie. And
this is Dan.
What's going on? We are recording in a new place yet again.
We're just like mobile, so we'll just
Mobile. Our church is mobile, and so are we.
That's
so is
right.
Our podcast. I want to say that it's, what time is it? It's 9:45 in the morning, which is different from our 8 p.m. recordings.
I feel much better.
Yeah, you sound much better.
I sound
much less grumpy cat.
Yeah, yeah. Because usually when we record, I'm just waking up.
Right, yeah, we should make that distinction because 8 p.m. is when you wake up.
Right, because I work overnight. And not only am I just waking up, I'm waking up to not having enough sleep because of the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So I feel much better this morning, even though I'm tired. Like, the sun is up. I was just outside reading my Bible. I feel good. I'm ready to do this.
And is it the Christian Bible?
No. It's the other type of Bible.
The Apocrypha.
Oh, really?
All right. So let's start off with one of our favorite things to talk about, which is what is new in Trump world?
What is new with Donald Trump?
So you said you're pretty excited about some of the things that are going on.
I mean, I'm not excited. I think they're actually horrifying, but... there's a lot of new stuff going on, and there's like new developments every single day, which is really strange. Like, I've never seen that in any presidency in which I've been alive, where it's been new every day. And, you know, I mean, when Clinton was going through his scandals, but that wasn't every day of his presidency.
Yeah.
Now it's every single day of Trump's presidency, there's a new thing. So I was at work last night, and I should have been entering stuff into the database because I was working. But I was on the iPad, and the story came up that Jared Kushner is now being investigated by the FBI because he was with Russian officials at Trump Tower and basically asked to have secret communications with Russia.
Awesome.
And like, this is a totally good reason to stop exactly what I'm doing at work and just focus in on this article because it was super, super interesting.
So I was trying to talk to a friend of mine about Jared Kushner and trying to define like his position, but he doesn't have a specific... Like, one of his roles is to bring peace to the Middle East. Like, that's what one of his responsibilities is.
He seems like he's just really qualified for that position.
Yeah. I mean, he's married to Ivanka, so...
I mean, look at that photo. He's just... peace all written all over that. It just blows my mind.
You were talking about Clinton. And with Clinton, it was one story,
and right.
There was just like new developments about that one story.
Right. This is like every direction, all the time, like so many different people, and they're like, it's basically like a whodunit story.
Yeah.
And eventually, we're gonna find out who done it in this story. And
so we don't know, or
I feel like we can all draw conclusions as to what happened, but nothing is ever certain.
This just feels like one of those detective shows. Like, have you ever seen The Wire?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So this is like The Wire, but we're still on episode two, where we know who the bad guy is, and the cops know who the bad guy is. They're just trying to collect enough evidence.
Yeah. It's especially difficult when it's the president.
Yeah.
Or what I think might be happening is maybe it's not even the president. Maybe it's just the people around the president, which is still... equally as horrifying,
yeah.
But I don't. Maybe I just think Trump might be too oblivious for all this stuff.
Which, no, he's
I don't know.
The smartest. People always tell him
he's the most intelligentest.
Yes,
yes.
No,
yeah. He's got big brains.
He's got the biggest,
bigly brain.
Yeah.
It's so interesting to be able to. I don't turn on the news. I don't ever do that. I don't watch Fox News, CNN, or anything like that.
And how do you know what's fair and balanced if you don't watch Fox News?
I probably
should. You're an unbalanced.
Actually, I sort of do watch Fox News because my roommate has it on constantly. So every time I go down to make a sandwich, I'm hearing about, you know, all sorts of stuff. And when I go to move his car, Rush Limbaugh is screaming in my face, or Michael Savage is screaming in my face, or Bill O'Reilly until recently.
Yeah. You know?
And so I feel like just because I've been getting those little snippets of the Fair and Balanced News Network, I actually have like a pretty good head on my shoulders.
Yeah.
But I just really, I don't pick it up from Facebook or anything like that. I bring up the Apple News app because it has every single media outlet.
Right.
Like, all there. So, like, when it asks you what your preferences are, I choose all of them. Even BuzzFeed, which has no business doing news at all. They should just stick to 10 people guess how expensive a milkshake is because that's what they're good at. But somehow, for some reason, they're covering the White House. So I try to look at all of those different things and then just see what's interesting here. The interesting thing about all of this drama is that almost every single news network except for Fox News is all on the same page.
Yeah. Well, here's the part that I'm hoping that some investigation will come out with, but I find that Comey was such a weird thing because when he got fired by Trump because he was investigating Trump, hashtag dictator move.
You're assuming that that's why he's got fired.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
It was because, you know,
he didn't clock in.
He didn't clock in.
He was tardy more than three times in a month.
He just wasn't fit for the job, even though Trump praised him during the campaign.
Well, and that's the part that is crazy to me. So he fired him. And so as soon as he fired him, the entire liberal side was like, oh, Comey is my homie and whatnot.
They hated him when...
Right, but they hated him because he pulled the whole Hillary thing right before the election.
Right.
So that's... Either Comey's like the only unbiased person, which in that case, I support him on both instances, or there's something else going on.
I was listening to the Daily podcast, which is New York Times, and they had an exclusive interview with a source that was close to Comey, and as they were sitting there talking about it, he really made it seem, and this is the news, so things can seem like things that they're not, but he had really made it seem like Comey really bought into his position as the director of the FBI, and he didn't want to compromise that for anything,
right?
For anyone and for anything. So that's why he did the Hillary thing, and that's why when Trump asked him to swear loyalty to him, which Hitler did, by the way, with all of his people, just saying, he said no, and he tried to avoid Trump. He tried to hide in the drapes and all this other stuff. He literally wore a suit that was the same color as the drapes in the Oval Office so that when he had to go there for a thing that he had to go there for, he didn't want to, he could, like, just sort of blend in. But, you know, Trump was really wanting to get that loyalty thing out of the way, so he sought him out. And I kind of admire the guy. I mean, it's hard to know exactly where his mind is, but I really do.
Yeah.
Like, from what I've heard, I think that stuff that Hillary did was terrible, too.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see.
What does that say about a president when someone thinks they can trick him into not seeing them by just wearing the same colors of the drapes?
Literally trying to blend, into the drapes of a room.
That's amazing.
In a lot of ways, he is sort of like a child.
Yeah.
And so, you know, children don't notice things. I don't know.
So, yeah, last week, Trump was on his world tour in the Middle East. And
his first overseas trip.
Yeah. So everyone, which I guess this is like a very historic trip because no other president has made their first outside trip to the Middle East. It was kind of crazy because he went to Saudi Arabia and everyone was like, okay, but they're Muslim. Like, he doesn't like Muslims, but he does love money.
He does, and he signed a big deal with them.
Yeah. So even though we want to keep business in America, he made $380 billion or...
I don't know the number.
Yeah, it was a ton of billions.
Yeah, it was a lot of money.
Weapon deal.
Yep.
So...
Sounds about right.
When the next president comes around, if you need a car salesman type to sell weapons overseas, Trump's your man.
That's right.
And there's been so many funny videos. I'm trying to determine whether Ivanka is, or not Ivanka, Freudian slip there, Melania is slapping his hand, or she's just like
not now.
Like,
or,
yeah, I'm here, I don't know, whatever. But there's this instance where whatever other dignitary he was walking with, the other guy was holding his wife's hand. So Trump reaches back, and she just basically is like, no, I'm not doing this right now. And then I guess the second instance was when they arrived in Rome and they're getting out of the plane.
I don't know if I saw that one or the other.
Yeah, so it was basically very similar. And so, you know, a lot of people are using that. But there is other pictures where they are walking and holding hands. Like they were in Sicily, and they were walking through the base there in Sigonella, and they were holding hands. So I don't know.
I don't really think that it's indicative of much.
No.
Because even if, like, what would Melania Trump, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense. So, like, I doubt that they're terribly in love. Like, I don't know that that's, like, ever been a thing that I've truly believed.
Right.
Because Trump is amazingly rich.
Yeah.
She seems actually, like, a pretty smart woman.
See,
it's really interesting.
Yeah, like, one of my coworkers was trying to make a case that she's really smart, and initially I just wanted to be resistant to it, but as the story progresses, I'm thinking, okay, she basically made a business deal with him. I'm going to stay married, but I'm going to keep doing my own life in New York. I'm not going to make any changes. You know, sometimes when you have to go on trips, I'll be there and stuff. But basically, she's not going to change anything about her life. And so what I'm thinking is she's playing the long game, because when he's impeached, she's going to have a fat book deal.
Yeah.
I mean, she's going to get it.
Either way, yeah, she's going to have a fat book.
She's going to be rich. Yeah, exactly. So maybe she's smarter than we think. One thing that I found really ironic was when he met the Pope. And so he brought the Pope, like, a first, you know, you exchange gifts, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so he brought the Pope a first edition set of Martin Luther King Jr. writings, which is, I think, it was a really nice gift. And the Pope gave him a 192-page paper, basically, that the Pope wrote on climate change. And so the irony in that is that, number one, as Christians, it's really easy to just dismiss the whole climate change and global warming and even littering, because you can go with the whole mentality of, like, okay, God created the world, and he's going to end the world.
I think that it's really easy as conservatives to dismiss climate change, not Christians. Because from a Christian standpoint, we cannot ignore climate change.
Well, the thing is I'm looking at it from a Christian point of view of, we read Revelations, and it doesn't say anything about climate change, so that's not how the world's going to end.
It says a lot of things.
Yeah.
And not very easy to understand
things.
Right,
yeah.
So, but I do understand what you mean.
Yeah.
Like, we know that that Jesus is coming back, and so why should I be worried about my extra Sunkist bottle? For a lot of reasons.
Right.
And I think most of those reasons are actually in the beginning of the book, not at the end of the book.
Yeah, and so, I'm thinking, okay, as Christians, you know, that used to be my mentality of, like, yeah, I don't really care. Like, I'll throw trash out. I don't really care. Like,
it's I don't need a fuel-efficient car.
Exactly.
Or, yeah.
Whereas now I've heard several discussions and conversations, and I've read several things where we're told to be stewards of what we have. And so that means stewards of our faith, stewards of our family, stewards of our finances, and also stewards of where we live. And so, mm-hmm. But the irony of it is this: here is a president of a superpower who is having to take instruction on something that's technically a political issue by a religious figure.
Right.
Because the religious figure understands that he's more knowledgeable about it than this president is.
Right.
And I just find...
Worry that he cares more.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I just think that was just one of the funniest things when I found out that's what he gave him. Because usually, I don't know, I guess he gives him...
Right.
Something from the 16th chapel or whatever.
I think that the whole Pope situation is really interesting. I've been doing a lot of reading of old writings,
mm-hmm.
and doing a lot of research into history. And it's funny how the papacy has changed over the course of the centuries. And, you know, we've had popes that have, like, literally committed genocide.
Right.
And we've had popes that sit in the conservative line and have decent, definitely not perfect theology.
Yeah.
Like, we can go into that at another point. I have my own problems with Catholicism and the papacy in general.
Yeah.
But definitely the new pope, which he's still new to me. I know he's been there for a while, but he definitely just is like a liberal figurehead in the Catholic Church more than any other pope that I've seen.
Right.
So he stands up for more on the liberal side of things than he does on the conservative side of things, especially in terms of when it comes to like homosexuality, things like that. He's really trying to like, I don't know if he's trying to please the people, appease the people, do what God asks of him. I don't know what he's doing there, but it's really interesting because there's actually a stark contrast between him and the last pope that we've had.
Oh, yeah, Ratzinger. Ratzinger was the last one, the German one.
Was that the last one?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
So there was Pope John Paul II.
The second.
And then I think it was Ratzinger.
I honestly get like really timid about saying stuff on the podcast because I later go back and I'm like, that was wrong.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like having a Fox and Friends apology at the beginning of every episode.
So the three of you who are listening, we're trying to keep it as accurate as possible.
It's definitely a big stark contrast between himself and Pope John Paul II. I can say that with certainty.
Right, yeah.
So I'm not sure about the last pope. I'm not a Catholic. But.
So Ratzinger was a huge shift in the papacy to begin with because he retired. He was just like, yeah, I'm done. Which usually never, well, not
usually they get sick.
It's never happened. Yeah, like it's a lifetime thing. Which I think it was so good because if you're not able to lead well because you're sick, then just step down and let somebody else step up. Here's what I would say. I find it interesting, and I think that it needs to be corrected, not you, but the mentality of liberal versus conservative when we're talking about faith issues. I think that has to shift to where we don't use those terms because we're talking about a pope and you're talking about like his religious and faith views on certain things, and we're looking at it in the filter of politics. And I think that what he's doing is he's trying to get that removed completely because I don't know the exact procedure how you would even go about impeaching a pope. But basically, I feel like he's at the top and he can say and do whatever he wants and everyone just
kind right. of has it to is oblige. True because yeah. a lot of – I'm not going to speak for every Catholic because I'm sure there are some listening to this. But I grew up in a predominantly Catholic city. We have a basilica in our town.
Right.
So very, very familiar. And a lot of Catholics will literally eat up whatever the pope says.
Right.
And in this case, I don't know if that – I don't think in any case that that's a good thing.
Mm.
But I'm not sure that in this case that it is a great thing because he is saying some Rob Bellish things
right.
too. So
yeah.
that's my thing. But you're right. We shouldn't see things of faith from a political perspective or a liberal and conservative aspect because they're not.
Yeah.
But that's how we see the world now in a partisan
view. And I think that that's where the church – I think this is where the church now – we are trying to, like, you know, even in our local church specifically, but even with, like, podcasts and conversations like this, like, we're trying to voice the fact that the church should not be connected to politics. And so when we say universal healthcare is a liberal ideology, no, it's not. It's a biblical ideology.
Yeah, but because it's to share everything in
share
the book of Acts, the early church. Yeah.
Exactly. And so when we talk about giving homosexual people the same civil rights, that's a civic conversation. That's a civil conversation. It's not necessarily a biblical conversation. The biblical conversation would be we love people no matter who they are, no matter what their sins are, and we tell them that we want them to follow Jesus. Now, if they start saying, okay, so I have a compulsive, kleptomania. Like, I'm dealing with kleptomania. Okay, then that's not really pleasing to God, and that's not going to allow your relationship with God to be fulfilled. So let's help you, through Jesus, try to deal with that.
Right.
Now, if you become a Christian, but you still struggle with kleptomania and you die tomorrow, do you go to heaven or do you go to hell? I mean, I guess no one can really say for sure, but I would say that as long as you understand your struggle and you're trying to work towards it, then you would go, you would be on God's side.
I mean, are you truly a believer in Jesus?
Exactly. And so I think that with issues like homosexuality, let me not oversimplify, because by no means am I an expert, but with the issues like homosexuality, like, we need to stop saying, oh, we're on the conservative side because it's an abomination and they shouldn't have the same human rights by the government. Number one, those things are not related.
They're not related.
Like, the
and
government
it's
is
so hateful.
Yeah, it's
like
so that, hateful
that
for them to not have the
so
same
hateful
rights. Yeah.
And literally, like, makes me sick.
And that's the part that I think, as far as the church and as far as Christians, and even like in these conversations, like, we need to change our speech, because obviously our speech is usually reflective of our hearts. And so we need to change our speech to not saying conservative or liberal, for saying, okay, this is biblical and this is what I believe in. And so now you want to talk about a civil rights conversation. Let's talk about a civil rights conversation. Absolutely, I'm influenced by my faith. Absolutely, I'm influenced by my biblical beliefs. But ultimately, whether I believe homosexuality is a sin or not does not affect my belief that they should have the same equal human civic rights.
Right.
That, like, I'm absolutely 100% confident that they should have the same exact, if they want to have a civic union, which, you know, there it's called a marriage, but I don't think that that's necessarily what marriage, this is where it switched to the biblical beliefs. Marriage in the biblical belief is between a man and a woman. Now, you want to have a civic union and you want to call it marriage, that's fine. I'm just going to argue that that's not the same marriage that God intended.
Right.
However, you want to do that, then that's fine. And you're going to have the same tax benefits and you're going to have the same civil rights. That's fine. That makes complete sense to me. But we have to separate those conversations, you know, the separation of church and state, not just in on paper, but it has to change in our speech, because when we stand up for one civil right or not, that basically defines for other people who see from the outside what we believe in as believers, and we're basically their definition of Christianity. We're their definition of Jesus, and we're screwing that up pretty big time.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that the one thing that I do get, at least from the Pope, kind of going back to where we were, is that I don't know if he is compelled by Christ to say and do the things that he does, mm-hmm. but I know that he probably feels like he is.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's where we should be speaking from too. Like, not just I'm a Christian, so I'm influenced by the Bible, mm-hmm. or whatever, but I'm actually compelled by Christ to love homosexual people, or to love the idea of taking care of the planet that God created.
Right.
Like, that stuff is absolutely 100% biblical.
Yeah.
And I feel compelled by Jesus to do those things.
And I hate, like, I think it has to be said, but it bothers me a lot that we have to specify we have to love homosexual people, because we should just be loving people to begin with. But for many believers and many people who have been in church for such a long time, they're just so set in their ways that if they hear the word homosexual, it doesn't register with them as people, as in your neighbor, which mm-hmm. God talks about in Scripture.
They hear sinner.
They hear someone who is the devil, basically. And so they're like, well, I'm not going to love the devil. And so I think that that's a huge problem, and I think that it's very much I'm gonna be careful with this, but the way that I understand it, which helps me with my limited understanding, is I see it as a parallel of slave owners owning slaves and still proclaiming their faith in Christianity, because what they were in their mindset was that the slaves were not people.
They were property.
They were property. And so they were defining it as black people or slave people. And so that little adjective defined the people to where, for them, it didn't register as the neighbor that you're supposed to love, or the people you're supposed to serve, or the people you're supposed to point to Jesus in Scripture.
Yeah. It was even back then during the slave times in America, they didn't refer to people as whites and blacks. Right. That was during civil rights.
Right.
They referred to people as humans and Negroes.
Right.
So they didn't, like, yeah, didn't they made that difference. It wasn't even segregation. It was like a totally different, like, species of animal.
Yeah.
And so, man, I hate even thinking about it. Right. But it's one of those things that when you let sin take over your heart,
mm-hmm.
and you just stand there with that authority, I am right about this.
Right.
Then it's going to take over. And the truth is that Trump does that. And he does that with his travel ban. He does that with the wall rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
And that has traveled all over the world.
Right.
Like, we just recently had an election, and luckily she didn't win in France with that woman that was very right-wing. And now in Japan, I don't know if you've heard about this, but they're having a lot of right-wing conservative nationalists in Japan
mm-hmm.
that are rising up. And luckily, they haven't won any elections yet. But their idea is that they want to make Japan great again. Literally what they say is that we need to make Japan great mm-hmm. again. And for them, that looks different. So for us, we want to go back to, like, I guess Trump wants to go back to the 50s and 60s, back before people were free and everybody said, oh, hey there, Joe, I'm driving my Buick. But they want to go back to before World War II with the emperor. They want to go back to – they want to have a monarchy again. They want to have those sort of – that same government because mm-hmm. basically what happened when we dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki is we wrote a new constitution for Japan. They've been under that for the last 70 years, which still kind of blows my mind because they're a free country. But these right-wing nationalists that really are following the same trend that Trump is, like, basically spread across the world is that we need to make Japan great again.
Right.
And they're hurting people in the process of doing that. They're going out on the streets with these vans with these speakers on top.
Right.
And they're, like, yelling at people and they're screaming at people. They're getting in fights with the police.
Mm.
They're, like, this stuff isn't good for the world.
Yeah.
And it's not all because of conservative values, but the idea that you can backtrack in history and create that same thing again. You can't do that.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't do that.
Well, I think it's interesting that you just brought up Japan because there's two things. I just watched a very short documentary last night, actually, on the Yakuza.
Interesting.
And like, the police fighting the Yakuza. But before I go to that, I think what's basically happening is we have this new generation of people that has no freaking idea what it was like before.
I think now, they do.
Yeah, and so they're like, oh, but I've seen pictures.
Yeah.
And I think that it looks great, and I think that that's going to be great. So let's bring it back to that. But none of them have ever lived through it because those who have either were on the side where they would like to bring it back to that because they had all the power, or they're on the side of like, hell no, we don't want to go back to that. That was a nightmare.
Right.
You know? And so I think that's basically what's happening is this whole new generation of people. You know, you got your Brexit, you got your French right wing, you got the Make America Great Again, the Japanese thing. And I think it's basically people who haven't lived through it. And so now they're just like, oh, I think it looks great in pictures, so I'm going to go back to that. But I have no idea what that's like. So,
right.
Yeah.
I think it's great that aside of all the other problems that I have with papacy. But I do think that the Pope as a person, being the counteractive to that. Because the Pope has influence everywhere.
Right.
And so that influence is to not try to backtrack in humanity, but let's try to give people basic human rights. Let's try to focus on human decency. Mm-hmm. Let's not, Molotov cocktail people's houses, all these things. Like, he's spoken out against violence and rioting, and I think that he's doing a good thing.
Yeah.
As much as nobody's perfect, I think he's doing a good thing.
Yeah, and I don't think me and you will ever know the inner implications or intrications of how to get elected Pope. Obviously, there's going to have to be some politics there and very much involved in that, but what was different about Pope Francis was that he was very much still directly involved with the charity portion of what the Catholic Church does. Like, he was still very much involved in hanging out with poor people in Argentina and, like, kissing lepers and, like, I mean, just, like, these things that usually someone who was trying to escalate themselves to the Pope level would not necessarily do anymore once they're at a certain level in the hierarchy of the Catholic Church. But he was still doing that. And so I think that whether there was some politics behind it or it was this switch in the Catholic Church where they're like, oh, wow, he's actually doing what we're what this guy we're following was doing, what Jesus was doing, then maybe we should put him in charge. And that's why.
Yeah. It speaks a lot to his character, too, because I don't know if people know this, but the Pope is unbelievably rich. So even in the Vatican, like in where the Pope lives, there's rooms of gold.
Oh, really?
Like they just, he literally,
it's like heaven.
He has, he literally has a room full of gold. And so, you know, there are some problems that arise with that, but I think that him stepping down from that into a situation like being among third world people and, you know, really making sure that whatever funds he's using is going to good use is a huge thing for someone's character.
Yeah.
And it's something that a lot of people won't do. Like, I'd love to say that, like, the people I work with, for example, they don't listen to this, they don't care. But they're not nearly as interested in being as good of a person as the Pope is.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pope gets a lot of criticism where I don't think he should. Because these, like, I literally was at work last night and there was this song playing on the radio and it was, in other words, girls, money, weed. They literally that those three words were played over and over and over again. And all my coworkers are like, girls, money, weed or whatever. And I'm just like, and when I think about that and then when I think about the Pope, and I think about, like, the Christians in my life and the people in my life, I'm just, like, super thankful for them.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely huge leaps between all three of those. Even between, like, a regular me, Joe Schmo, Christian, and someone who's in in the Vatican. I think there's basically a huge difference. And, but, yeah, it's,
if
I don't know.
If he can make an influence on Trump, which is basically how we got to this conversation, I think that that would be an incredibly a worthwhile thing.
Yes, and just like we always say about Trump, we're, you know...
I'm waiting to be surprised.
I'm waiting to be surprised.
Not surprised so far.
A couple of weeks ago, we had a sermon from our lead pastor, and he was talking about loving our leaders and praying for our leaders, and he got me pretty good because basically he made it an interactive type of experience. Do you remember that? And he said, we're going to pray for people, and so... You know, he had one person pray for just for, like, leaders of the local church and leaders of, like, church nationally. And then...
World leaders.
And then he asked me to pray for world leaders, including...
I knew that
person.
He was doing that.
Yeah.
I knew that he was doing that.
And I was like, man...
He knows you.
Like, it's... I mean, what's really funny is it was, like, it was definitely, like, a gotcha kind of moment. But I mean the fact that I... want him to be to surprise us. I mean the fact that I would love for Trump to be influenced by Christ and to come out on national TV and say, hey guys, I've been an idiot up until now. I've been very selfish and very prideful, and now I've met Jesus and I'm going to try to change things. And it's not going to happen overnight, obviously, but if that happens, I'd be very happy, and I would absolutely, not that I would forgive what he's done or said, because I have no power to do so, but I would love to see him, because that's ultimately that's what Jesus is gonna
do.
But I'd definitely welcome it.
Yeah, I'd definitely be praying that the Lord would help that in me. I want to be clear, especially with people that are listening, like, we talk a lot about Trump. At least I know that I'm not for his impeachment, because I know that who lays underneath Trump seems worse.
Yeah.
And so I'm not for impeachment. Even in when it comes to Donald Trump, I'm not a big fan of anyone losing their jobs. But if he's done something wrong, he better go.
See, I'm for impeachment because this is another one of those situations where I would separate the, you know, like a faith decision and a political decision. And I think if he was impeached... and Mike Pence becomes president. This was the same thing with Hillary. I don't think that Hillary would have been this amazing, charitable person that we would all have been proud of. I don't think that Mike Pence will be that either. However, I know that they would be much more diplomatic. I know that when I travel to Europe this summer, if Hillary was president, people would have a different regard for someone that comes from the United States of America. I know that foreign relations would be a lot different with other countries. And so, yeah, I don't think Pence's decisions are going to be much different, but I think diplomacy is a huge portion of being a diplomat.
I almost feel like things overseas might be better, but things here might get worse under Pence. That's just my view.
Yeah, maybe.
I sort of feel like he would, like, he is so much for religious, like, I don't even know what the word.
Yeah, because, like, we're not using conservative anymore.
It's so hard to say without using those terms, but he's so much for the Christian right, so to speak.
Right.
That I do believe that he just doesn't think about the people, like, that don't
you can't force
think
it
that way.
Yeah, he's a crusader,
right?
Like, but the Catholic Church crusader, not the campus crusader.
And but see, the thing is, one of my biggest problems with him is something that we just talked about. He likes to mix religion and politics.
Yeah,
he loves that.
Yeah,
and it's something that I believe that not only shouldn't happen, but Jesus would disapprove of.
Yeah,
and it just blows my mind. And I don't want to see that happen in this country.
Yeah. He would be willing to make it. He would be like the United States Erdogan, who is basically his whole campaign is trying to make Turkey a national Muslim country.
It's so, like, that situation is so, like, yeah, heartbreaking.
Yeah. And so, like, you would think as a Christian, we'd be happy that Pence would want to make it a national Christian. But if you're forcing it on people, then it's
not
real.
You're not. And that's the same thing with
God didn't force God on us.
When Constantine was the first emperor Christian, like, created a theocracy,
right,
essentially, people didn't even really buy that.
Right.
Like, he was trying to do something that I believe that God didn't want to happen. He saw government and, like, Jesus saw government and what he was doing as separate. And I believe that they're separate too. Not because I don't believe that pastors should be running the world. Because pastors have a way more important thing going on.
Yeah.
And that's
people's
shepherding
souls,
the people of God,
yeah,
and preaching the gospel. And it's really hard to preach the gospel when you got to be worrying about health care.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. It's just one of those things that you can't really do both well. You know, you're gonna have to focus on one side or the other.
It's really funny how we've been talking this long about one thing. We had a whole list of things to talk about. It's not gonna happen.
You guys go online and check out videos of boas catching bats, and we won't even have to, like, that's something we're gonna talk about.
Oh man,
what was it? Was it Cuban boas?
Yeah,
Cuban boas.
It's so terrifying.
Hunting bats.
Artie has a thing about snakes.
No, I hate them. Like,
yeah,
I'm terrified of them.
I don't really. Snakes don't bother me. Spiders bother me big time.
Yeah,
but Artie has a big problem with snakes, and so I can definitely see the terror.
Oh, I'm sorry. I read Genesis. My bad. it's a pretty terrifying scientific discovery that now snakes work in groups, which was never the case. Which
they
I guess was
packs.
The case, but it was never. Yeah, they hunt in packs, which is.
What if it was like all snakes at one time started hunting in packs? Garden snakes started hunting in packs in your backyard.
Yeah, how do you stop a snake? I mean, only with fire, because they swim.
Ugh.
Yeah, exactly.
I hate thinking about that.
So yeah, we had a whole bunch of stuff, but that's fine. So here's what we're gonna be doing. If you're listening to this episode on iTunes, there's two places that it's going to be in. The first one is our original Passengers standalone podcast. So what we'll be doing is we'll be posting these shorter episodes with just Dan and I every month or so. We'll be posting these on both platforms. So it'll be on our standalone Passengers podcast. But we want to encourage everyone to start subscribing and moving over to the Everyday Exiles feed. And so it's the Everyday Exiles podcast. This is a podcast network that we're now a part of. There's the Everyday Podcast, Everyday Exhaust Podcast that's on there. Echo Chamber is on there. Irreverent Reverend is on there, which is very entertaining. Basically, if you live in the South and you like Duke or Virginia Tech. Guys love talking about Duke or Virginia Tech.
They're interesting. It works a little bit differently than most podcasts that are on a podcast network. So, like, if you think about, like, HowStuffWorks.com,
right.
All of their podcasts have individual pages
right.
on iTunes for their podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're doing is if you subscribe to the Everyday Exiles podcast, which is its own page, you'll see that there's a mix of all of the different podcasts.
Right.
So don't think that you need to be looking for Everyday Exiles / Passengers. You just want to be
yep.
part of that one subscription, and then you'll get both all of their podcasts and our Passengers podcast straight to there.
Right. So if you are listening to our standalone Passengers podcast, the only thing we'll be posting will be one episode a month, which is just the shorter conversations with Dan and I. We are going to be posting two episodes every month, and the second one is almost always going to be an interview. And so you're listening to this on Tuesday, and 2 weeks from now we'll have a new episode, which is an interview that I was able to do with a friend of mine called Ryan Meadows. Dan wasn't able to make it, but I got to interview Ryan, and it was such a good conversation. He's this guy that he has traveled a bunch of different countries in the last 5 months. He ended up somehow in India, and he got a music award in Bollywood while he was there, which I don't think he was expecting. So it's a very interesting – he's a very interesting person, and it's a very interesting conversation. So, again, subscribe to the Everyday Exiles podcast. That's what it will be. We're both on Twitter and on Facebook. You can look for Passengers or VA, or you can look for Everyday Exiles, and all of our content will be on both. But yeah, we're going to be slowly moving everything over to the Everyday Exiles podcast, because that's the network that we're going to be a part of. That's where we're going to be transferring all of our information to. So subscribe to that. That way you don't have to keep going back and forth, and you get the benefit of three more podcasts, which are really good and really interesting, that you get to listen to. So there's usually two episodes a week that they post.
Yeah, Dan and Artie approve of those podcasts. We approve those messages. Make sure that you're subscribed, and don't forget to come back and check us out, because a lot of podcasts post multiple times a week. You know, we're going to be every couple weeks or so. So just hang out with us, and we'll see where it goes.
That's right. All right. Well, thank you so much, guys, for joining us as we voice our opinions on Trump world.
Politics, basically.
And snakes.
And snakes.
Very shortly on snakes, but
Trump and snakes, is that like a comparison?
I'm gonna see if there's a website that exists. I'll get the domain name on it. But if you have any questions, email us passengersva@gmail.com. We are on Twitter @passengersva. We're on Facebook passengersva. So hit us up if you have any questions. If you know someone, or if you are someone that has an interesting story and would like to get it out there, hit us up and let us know, and we'd love to interview you and get together and talk about that. So, but yeah, thanks for joining us, guys. My name is Artie.
And my name is Dan.
And we're the Passengers.
Bye-bye.